Brick, building things, throwing. Blanket, keeping warm, smothering fire, tying to trees and sleeping in as a hammock, improvised stretcher. Where is Florence's imagination? He identified the most common and most functional uses for bricks and blankets and simply stopped. The fact that Florence's IQ is higher than Poole's tells us nothing, since both students are above the threshold. What matters is that Poole's mind can leap from violent imagery to sex to people jumping out of buildings without missing a beat, and Florence's mind can't. Now, which of those two students do you think is better suited to do the kind of brilliant, imaginative work that wins Nobel Prizes? That's the second reason Nobel Prize winners come from Holy Cross as well as Harvard, because Harvard isn't selecting its students on the basis of how well they do on the uses of a brick test. It's also the reason Michigan Law School couldn't find a difference between its affirmative action graduates and the rest of its alumni. Being a successful lawyer is about more than IQ. It involves having the kind of fertile mind that Poole had. And just because Michigan's minority students have lower scores on convergence tests doesn't mean they don't have that other critical trait in abundance. This was Terman's error. He fell in love with the fact that his termites were the absolute pinnacle of the intellectual scale, at the 99th percentile of the 99th percentile, without realizing how little that seemingly extraordinary fact meant. By the time the termites reached adulthood, Terman's error was plain. Some of his child geniuses had grown up to publish books and scholarly articles and thrive in business. Several ran for public office, and they were two Superior Court justices, one municipal court judge, two members of the California State Legislature, and one prominent state official. But few were nationally known figures. They tended to earn good incomes, but not that good. The majority had careers that could only be considered ordinary, and a surprising number ended up with careers that even Terman considered failures. Nor were there any Nobel Prize winners in his exhaustively selected group of geniuses. His fieldworkers actually tested two future Nobel laureates as elementary students, William Shockley and Luis Alvarez, and rejected them both. Their IQs weren't high enough. In a devastating critique, the sociologist Pitcham Sorokin once showed that if Terman had simply put together a randomly selected group of children from the same kind of family backgrounds as the termites, and dispensed with IQs altogether, he would have ended up with a group doing almost as many impressive things as his painstakingly selected group of geniuses. By no stretch of the imagination or of standards of genius, Sorokin concluded, is the gifted group as a whole gifted. By the time Terman came out with his fourth volume of Genetic Studies of Genius, the word genius had all but vanished except for the title. We have seen, Terman concluded, with more than a touch of disappointment, that intellect and achievement are far from perfectly correlated. In other words, what I told you at the beginning of this chapter about the extraordinary intelligence of Chris Langan is of little use if we want to understand his chances of being a success in the world. Yes, he is a man with a one-in-a-million mind and the ability to get through Principia Mathematica at 16. Yes, his sentences come marching out one after another, polished and crisp like soldiers on a parade ground. But so what? If we want to understand his chances of succeeding in the world, we have to know a lot more about him than that. Chapter 4, The Trouble with Geniuses, Part 2.